is Dave Hanratty, and there will be no encore. I almost forgot to start my own show because I'm just so stressed out. I'm so stressed out for episode 82 of the No Encore Music Podcast. Cole Morrigan and I are very, very stressed out. because, well, I think we're just shocked that an apparition.
Relax, guys.
An apparition has appeared in the studio.
I'm back!
I'm not applauding. I am not applauding. For those of you who missed our Sunday recording episode, and I mean missed our Sunday recording episode, Craig, what happened?
I don't remember because I was unconscious at the time in bed.
Right, okay. Yeah.
But what happened at 2 o'clock when I woke up was that I went, oh shit, what? I missed the show.
It was terrific. Yeah. Flurry of volley of messages that we got in our no-encore.
Block caps, just fucking hell.
Jesus. So we haven't sacked him, despite some calls. I actually tried to get Richard Chambers on this episode to kind of
to
be
replace
your, to be your shadow audition replacement man.
Oh, awesome.
Do you want to say it to listeners? First of all, listeners who came to the live show, and then also the listeners who've been listening all along.
Thanks for coming to the live show, guys. And to listeners that go like way back with us, I feel like I had to do it. I mean, it wasn't really a proper episode. I mean, I had a great interview with Sean Adams, of course. But like, I mean, let's not forget, guys, before the live show, there was talk of that episode being called like 80B. Do you know what I mean? So I was getting mixed signals, and I was thinking, well, it's the same week. It's kind of like a repeat performance directly after the show, almost like an encore. I got nothing. I'm deeply sorry.
It has nothing to do with me leaving you at 20 to 3 in the morning, a tram line, and then you not leaving there until, what, 5, was it?
Like, it was slightly later.
Okay.
Yeah. You forced me to go out for 3 nights in a row.
Forced
I'm
you?
I'm an old man now. I'm forced at the end you? Of my 20s.
You're a student.
You went out for like 13 nights in a row before you start giving it up.
One of those nights in a row was our live show.
You did kind of force him into that, though.
Yeah, yeah, I guess, you did. Yeah, I suppose.
You did.
We're all like, I'm not hosting it on my own. And Craig was like, fine.
I'll fine, we'll do, yeah. we'll do it. We'll do it. Yeah, I'm here now when it counts.
It's. I was going to say, it's good to have you back. You're back. We'll just go with that. You're back.
Yeah. Cool. I'm back.
And will he be traveling across the country with us?
He knows that we're doing this.
What's the next issue?
Watch this space.
What are you talking about, Colin?
We're going to Galway. Part of the National Student Radio Conference. We are going to be finishing it out on the Saturday afternoon, November 4th. Live from NUIG. Craig, do you fancy it?
I might pop in.
Okay, right, we'll see.
I might pop in.
We won't hold you to it, though.
I mean, nothing more firm than that.
You are a student now, so yeah. You can, you know, you be with your own kind.
They're my own kind now.
So make you feel better, no?
The students of Galway.
Swap notes.
Okay. Do you want to sit with the students while we do the show?
Sure. I'm like pretty good with a roaming mic, am I?
I've seen it in action when the stage has
been too full for me, and I've had to stand at the side of the stage.
Craig was referring to the time at Electric Picnic, I think it was 2012, when I walked by the Hot Press tent and was met with a surreal image of, I think it was all 5 of O Emperor were on the stage, and because there was no more room, you were standing in the crowd like a fucking game show host, just clad in a suit, of course.
Yeah, just shouting questions.
And I was like, huh?
I've been there as well. Yeah. I had to do with the Stripes because their actual interviewer didn't turn up. So I just had to stand in the crowd and shout questions at them.
Wow.
I was refusing to go on stage because I just was not ready.
That happened twice with the Stripes. I had to interview them on short notice
as
well.
Yeah, because I went to see Explosions.
Was that you?
I went to see Explosions in the Sky. Yeah, yeah. I'd rather go and see Explosions in the Sky than interview the Stripes. Yeah. Would you mind?
And they proceeded to mock me for not knowing much about them.
Oh, well, I went to Explosions in the Sky and there was some girl like sitting on her boyfriend's shoulders like fucking being like, this song is my favourite song. And I was like, do you even know who this band is?
Yeah.
Where were you in 2008 when I was crying in Tripod, huh? Huh?
Jesus.
By crying, I mean a solitary tear going down my cheek in the apex of the show, listener. Anyway, let's talk news and let's bring it right down.
I was about to say, yeah, all that joviality to start the show, and it's kind of been a sad week. First with the news that Tom Petty passed away.
Yeah, and it was news before it actually happened, which made
strange.
It worse. That was an odd night where it was announced that he'd passed away from cardiac arrest at his home in Malibu, and then it turned out that he was actually in hospital, and it was kind of an overnight thing of like hoping to wake up with some miracle because he was in a grave state, and sadly it wasn't to be. But I mean, just like this one hit me really hard because I think sometimes you kind of overlook Tom Petty just because he was kind of so good at just writing like classic rock melodies that are just a part of the fabric of, you know, that
you know
kind
what?
Of thing.
You absolutely nailed it there because when I was trying to put my thoughts together for this, I said like, yeah, he was like the songwriting colossus. But the weirdest thing is that when I was growing up, he was one of those artists that like my aunts listened to, I'd hear back in the day, so to speak. But I always assumed that the songs I was hearing were like 70s Stone Cold classics. It was only years later that I learned like Free Falling and Learning to Fly.
They were all like late 80s coming into the 90s.
Yeah. I was alive for all of those. And I was stunned when I found out.
Yeah.
And then what's more, then you kind of go, An American Girl, how about that? And you're like, oh no, that was 1976 or something. It turns out that this guy just had like this ageless ability to tap into sort of style.
Yeah. And like,
for 20 years plus.
And he could easily, you know, rub shoulders with the likes of Bob Dylan and George Harrison in the Traveling Wilburys. Like, he was of that stature. And when you think of like American kind of, you know, like heartland rock, you think of Bruce Springsteen and Tom Petty. They're like the two.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he didn't have like, you know, the boss's authority and I'm going to, you know, talk about social issues and all of that kind of thing. But he had some bloody great tunes.
It's impossible to talk about the war on drugs without referencing Tom Petty. I've done it myself.
Yeah, yeah.
But my abiding memory of Tom Petty is when I was younger, I had the VHS tape of Ireland's World Cup qualification.
Homecoming.
You had it?
No, it was the homecoming.
No, because it was like, it was them going to the World Cup.
Right.
And I think it was like when they scored the goal to get them there, Won't Back Down was playing over this montage reel, and I was like, you know, a young boy, all about big dreams and all these things that are now gone, of course.
This would make sense because I had...
And I was I would watch it on repeat, like, you know, and burn it into me. And so that song to me is always suited with that and will always be there.
That's weird because I was just thinking about
when Ireland crash out of the current World Cup qualification. See, Martin Neal just got given a new deal. Just announced.
Did he? What?
Yeah.
Today?
Why not?
Of all days.
They've done this before.
This, by the way, folks, is like less than 24 hours before the Moldova game. So
that
could,
is
like,
the worst.
All end
this happened before. I swear this happened before with him.
No, like this sort of stuff does happen. Like I can remember.
It was like, hey, we're not going to qualify. Have a new contract.
Yeah, it happened with rugby as well. Eddie O'Sullivan signed a contract like immediately before the World Cup. And then we got thumped and everyone was like.
Yeah, no, they just announced it there, literally 10 minutes ago.
That's the most ridiculous professional decision since you guys let me stay on now encore.
It's true.
But yeah, I was just going to mention is. His Super Bowl halftime show a few years ago, which was just amazing. And I remember like some of those songs you mentioned, like Free Fallin' and stuff. And then towards the end, it was the one where I think the Giants beat the Patriots, like just kind of out of the blue.
Yeah,
Tom Brady was like crying at the end as they played that Free Fallin' again over the end. And I was just like, this is just America. This is the most American thing I've ever seen in my life. And Tom Petty kind of epitomized everything that, you know, makes America aspirational at a time when, you know, a lot of the American stuff isn't so great.
Yeah. And speaking of which,
yeah, I mean,
very, very, very
we have
dark
to talk
news.
About it. You
yeah,
know,
of course.
Yeah,
on Sunday at a country music festival in Las Vegas, at least 58 people killed and more than 500 others wounded in an attack where Stephen Paddock from the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay Hotel opened fire. Truly horrific. I mean, is it the worst mass
shooting
in American history?
I can't make sense of those numbers.
Yeah.
I just can't make sense of them.
When you think, like, it was a fully automatic gun, as you're literally talking about, and just from that height as well, so you...
It's just spraying. Like,
yeah, right? Absolutely.
It's not worth thinking about.
No, it's not.
And, yeah, I mean, like you say, those numbers in any walk of life are startling and frightening. But I suppose for a music world that's already kind of in the past, you know, 12 or 18 months been shocked by the Ariana Grande concert. I suppose it's 2 years now going back to the Bataclan, but that, you know, also was a truly horrific event.
There was the shooting in Pulse nightclub. Was it in Miami?
Yeah, that's right. Of course,
same thing
in Orlando.
It's people going to have a good time and, like, you know, like kind of just like enjoy music and be with their friends. And I find these acts of terrorism in particular, because that's what they are. If Donald Trump doesn't want to call him a terrorist, fair enough, but that's what it is.
Yeah.
I find these ones in particular to be just among the most cowardly. It's pure cowardice. It's fucking disgusting. I'm sick of it. I mean, like, now Encore is obviously a very, you know, we're irreverent and we try and have a sideways glance at the world of music, but obviously it would be irresponsible of us, I think, as broadcasters to not look at this. But all we can say really is, I mean, it's horrific. It's horrible. It's impossible to try and make sense of. One person did this. It is pure evil. It is horrendous. It is awful, and I hate that it happened.
Yeah, and of course, you know, once you get past the awful tragedy and the loss of life, I mean, especially in America now, a lot of the talk turns to gun rights and that issue. And one of the things that is kind of interesting about this case, I guess, was because it was at a country music festival, and, you know, so many of these musical events and the artists you would think you'd kind of just assume, oh, they're quite liberal leaning, they're probably for gun restrictions. This is kind of, you know, hitting a part of the music culture in the States where you'd have a lot of support supporters for gun rights and stuff. So the debate is kind of fiercer than it might have been otherwise. And a few people have been speaking out.
Yeah, already one of the acts to actually play the festival have weighed in. Caleb Keeter, a guitarist for the Josh Abbott Band, performed at the festival, and he said that, you know, he's been a proponent of the Second Amendment all his life until the events of last night. He says, "We need gun control right now. My biggest regret is that I stubbornly didn't realise it until my brothers on the road and myself were threatened by it. We were unbelievably fortunate not to be among the number of victims killed or seriously wounded by this maniac."
Yeah, he had guns on the bus, on his tour bus.
Yeah, but what's more, they said...
to them, and also, he's like, if we pull out guns, we'd be shot dead on the spot.
Yeah, I think I kind of, you know, like that old argument you get where, well, if the good guys have good guns, and it doesn't quite work out that way when this totally random event happens, and, you know, kind of something on that scale. Roseanne Cash, obviously, daughter of the late Johnny Cash, so a huge figure in country music, has been speaking out, as she's done kind of many times in the past, but she's written a new op-ed for the New York Times. She's basically called for all country artists to stand up against the National Rifle Association, and she's talked about how she's been kind of a gun control activist for 20 years. She's, you know, she's been speaking out a lot, and she says she gets a lot of kind of, well, threats and things against her. She hears, you know, your garden variety, your dad would be ashamed of you, sexist nonsense, along with much more menacing threats. But the gist of her point is that, I guess, stand up to the bullies and don't let, you know, the NRA dictate this argument, because it's not just solely their domain.
Who've done their usual social media blackout and kind of not talking at all when something like this happens. I mean, I saw some reaction to your man, Caleb Keeter. People were like, you know, saying, oh, you know, how fucking dare you have the opinion that you had up until now? I mean, ultimately, I would say, look, whatever it caused him to see the fucking light, at least it's a good thing. For example, I'm more disappointed with Killer Mike of Run the Jewels, who everyone thinks is like the most liberal guy in the world. Turns out he isn't, because he's all like, he's pro, like, he doesn't want gun control.
Yeah, no.
What the fuck?
Yeah, but I mean, you see, the thing is that, like, you know, people start to judge moral outrage at a certain point here. Like, I mean, the most obvious example being the Eagles of death metal. And Jesse, what's his face? His surname
Hughes.
Is
yeah
Hughes. Jesse Hughes, who is a defender of the Second Amendment and blah blah blah. And so after the Bataclan, when he wasn't sort of towing
the line,
oh, he
went from hero to villain,
precisely, because he wasn't towing the line that a lot of people expected him to do after the fact.
Yeah, I think this is like one of the worrying things, maybe about, you know, worrying things about social media. But you know, it is becoming this thing.
Like,
for your judge, but you're just this one thing.
Yeah.
So extremes, you have to be in line with. It's very black and white, and people are, you know, people contain multitudes, and people learn new things all the time, and they evolve. And
emotions are obviously running seriously high in the wake of something like this. Right. And it's horrendous, it's horrible, and I don't know. I don't know what else to say. Apart from, let's move on to a story which is also kind of grim.
We're getting through them.
Not as grim.
Glad to be back, guys.
I
should have slept through this.
I promise the show will go into an upswing before the last news story.
We'll
okay? I swear. But we have to talk about this as well. Anthony Fantano, known as The Needle Drop, he is a YouTuber. I used to be a blogger. Kind of still is a bit of a blogger. He's in the news this week. Now, if you don't know who he is, we've actually talked about him on the show before. As a matter of fact, back in June when we had Richard Chambers on the podcast, when we were reviewing Vince Staples' Big Fish Theory, we closed off by giving it scores, and Anthony Fantano's name came up. That sounded like this.
No. I'll give him an 8 out of 10 for the album and a 10 out of 10 for pissing Anthony Fantano off.
Do. Can we talk about Anthony Fantano for a second?
Can we?
Yes. He is a guy, he used to have a blog called The Needle Drop, and now he has a YouTube channel, and he does album reviews, and he seems to have a bit of a bee in his bonnet about Vince Staples.
He fucking hates all new good rap music, that is. He does, he trashed Damn, which is, I mean, come on. I mean, it wasn't Kendrick Lamar's best album, obviously, but like... Perspective, man. Perspective. From the internet's busiest music wanker. Yes.
I find him very irritating. I hate those kind of quick cut video edits anyway.
Yeah. Transition. Yeah.
You can see the smugness levels increasing as his pop.
And what Lord is doing with this one is she's really tapped into the mindset of...
I think he never says anything.
No, you know, nothing. Yeah. Nothing. Yeah. We're calling you out, Fantano.
Yeah.
So yeah, we called Anthony Fantano, and it turns out someone else has beaten us to it. Ezra Marcus from The Fader has written a massive expose about Anthony Fantano. Essentially, how do we give the cliff notes here, Craig.
Okay, so Anthony Fantano, as well as having the needle drop, has this other YouTube channel called That Is The Plan, which he's taken offline now. The Fader writer is saying that it's actually, he's removed all the content in response to kind of questions over some kind of troubling content maybe that was on it. And I wasn't actually aware they even had this, and I was trying to figure out what exactly was going on, so I can't give a proper account really of the, you know, extent of what he was doing or even some of these allegations. But essentially the kind of accusation is that he was very much like pandering to the alt-right, you know, kind of getting involved with a lot of memes that would veer on the side of, you know, anti-social justice warrior and anti-feminist, and doing a lot of kind of parodies of rappers as well.
Outright impressions as well.
Yeah.
He's which white, is, they're it, not.
It, which is very much kind of in contradiction to, like, he's had a stance where he feels like he's very much embedded in hip-hop culture in a respectful way, and he's, you know, refused to say the N-word and kind of other admirable things like this. But it just seems like this is a real almost split personality thing between the two channels, and yeah.
He has yet to respond. He's going to respond. He said that much, and I presume he's going to go down the road of, I'm playing a character, the character of satire. Sure. And I mean, like, ultimately, I kind of feel like while that may be a defense, I don't think he's anywhere near as brilliantly funny and clever as he thinks.
Well, he's terrible, first of all.
Yeah. Without a doubt. I mean, there are some things that are taken issue with in this Fader article, and I'm sure elsewhere, which are clearly done for comedic purposes.
Yeah.
Albeit they are
not funny.
Not funny in the slightest.
Yes. But yeah, like,
you know, there's not necessarily the badness in them that people are necessarily trying to.
Yeah, and like, I don't, just from kind of, yeah, what I've been trying to figure out about the channels, I don't actually think he's like, some, you know, history's greatest monster or whatever. He's just really, really crap at satire.
You see.
And I also think he's trying to have his cake and eat it as well. Probably. Because, I mean, the article says that, like, itself, it's kind of, you know, he's like a lot of people that would be maybe aligned with alt-right stuff and
support him quite strongly.
Yeah,
yes.
Like on 4chan, well, like music boards.
And he has
there's
had
some
on,
crossover.
He has had on, like, people on his show who are disgusting human beings.
Sorry, God.
And have said really horrible shit, really nasty, misogynistic, violent things.
Yeah, like apparently.
And he's like laughing along,
he was
not chastising them.
He was in conversation apparently with this Sam Hyde guy. Mm. Now, he's apparently like like he's like an edgy, he sees himself as an edgy comedian. So he'll talk about, like, you know, got raping people and blah, blah, blah. But he'll do it under the auspices of, like, well, I'm just pushing the boundaries.
Sure.
It's almost like. It's like a really bad Jerry Sadowitz or something from the 80s, mm-hmm, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But all these people are really dreadful at doing it. And yeah, I think the thing is, Fantano probably sees he's getting a lot of hits to these videos. He probably is
he
the guy that
well.
Also enjoys the kind of adulation he gets from a lot of these people. And he's like just that timid bloke that won't actually stand up and say, listen, guys, getting a bit out of hand. I think it's probably that.
There's a possibility. I think the other reason, though, why he's in such trouble here is a line that I always remember an author that I interviewed coming out with, where he said, like, an audience will tolerate anything except incompetence.
Yes. Yeah, that's
where
I think that's the
root. He was talking about creating a character, ironically enough, and he was saying that, like, you know, you can make a really, really flawed character. In fact, a bad person. People will kind of fall into the rhythm of it if he's still functioning as he's meant to.
Yeah.
But if you've got like a bumbling detective who's actually blowing cases, that's when people lose their shit.
Yeah.
And so when you've got what is essentially right now a combination of a comedy video maker who's not particularly funny and a music critic
who's not particularly
to have,
good. Well, and gave Kanye. No, sorry.
But
I won't get into
it.
But like a music critic who now, because of this, has lost so much of the integrity that he very clearly was trying to build for a long time. Yeah, he's
it's
not
ego.
Left with a lot. But
it's ego,
way.
Though. Like, it's definitely ego because, I mean, like, the fact is he had this other channel running concurrently and it's there. Like, it's not hidden. And it's the thing where it's like, he's hiding in plain sight. Like, something like this was always going to happen. Now, some people have described this Fader article as a hit piece. People who are very defensive of Fantano. And
I think maybe there's an element of, do you know what? This guy is so massive. Let's take him down a peg or two. I do think there could be. Now, again, this is like full proviso. I wasn't aware of everything on the channel, so I'm very much trying to catch up with this stuff. But a lot of it seems a bit like, you know, adding two and two together and getting five, I think.
Well,
maybe
one, I guess to wrap up, what I would say is, I know, Craig, you say he isn't history's greatest monster, but what do you think his worst crime is?
So back in the day, he gave Kanye West's My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy a 6 out of 10.
I'd say it's a 7.
Bring back hanging.
Oh, get rid of him. Sick of him.
Right, let's have some levity, shall we?
Let's.
I went to see Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, a nice cheery, what, rom-com?
Family comedy, yeah.
On Monday at the media screening, guys. Right. And yeah, that's when I left the cinema to learn that Tom Petty was dead. And then when I got home, he was alive. It was all very confusing. Yeah, so Jared Leto is the main antagonist in that picture. Jared Leto, who, of course, comes under fire quite a lot, pretty much every time he opens his mouth or does anything. And yeah, he is in the news. Why are we talking about Jared Leto? Because he's going to play Hugh Hefner. The recently deceased Hugh Hefner, body's not even cold yet, and he is going to be in a film directed by Brett Ratner, who's a famously terrible film director.
Oh yeah. My god.
This is all the makings of a bad film.
I mean, it must be said, Dave, that if I'd handed this to you, right, with all the proper nouns removed, and asked you to start just guessing to fill it in, I think you'd have done really well. If I said, blank is to play Hugh Hefner in a blank directed biopic.
Yeah.
Supported by blank and blank. Who else are in for the role? Well, Robert Downey Jr. and Hugh Jackman were the other possibilities.
Isn't Jared Leto like one of those intense method actor guys?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Craig, because he went from, for the role of the Joker in Suicide Squad, he became a massive prick and pissed people off quite a lot. For Blade Runner 2049, he went blind because his character's blind.
So what's he going to do for this? Is he going to live in a mansion surrounded by half-naked women?
Yeah, he won't have to do much prep to play the role of a sexual deviant.
Yeah. It must be said, though, like you said, he played a blind guy in Blade Runner.
That's correct.
Does he play a blind absolute prick? Because I didn't really notice a change in personality between the two movies.
He's actually pretty good in Blade Runner. Now, to be fair,
he's a talented guy. He's just a massive prick.
he's an awful human being. Well, here's the thing, okay? Blade Runner,
music's a bit shit as well.
Quick capsule review, because it's actually out in cinemas today. I'm a massive fan of the original Blade Runner, and I've been hyped for this film all along. It's 3 out of 5, guys. It's very long. Down. It's way too long. It's utterly, utterly mesmerizing.
I've heard it looks stunning.
But little lies behind those mesmerizing eyes.
Like Jared Leto.
Jared Leto is one of the better things in the film. He's one of the better things in the film. But to be fair, he's not in the film that much.
Okay.
And his dialogue is very ponderous, and I don't really know what he was talking about.
But actually, do you know what? He'll probably do a good job in this, but it's the Brett Ratner thing that actually got me when I was reading down through it. It's just like, because I think there's a very interesting story to be told about Hugh Hefner and how he changed culture and how he always kind of wanted to be seen as a proper journalist as well and that kind of thing. I don't think we're going to get that from the guy that like was behind the Rush Hour franchise.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Although, more, The Last Stand.
Be like although, you know what, then again...
Hey, Rush Hour is fun.
When you look at Hugh Hefner's life and the sort of, shall we say, different viewpoints and different opinions that would be, you know, subject to it, I don't think you could ever have a sort of an authoritative biography.
Well, I just hope that the Vince McMahon film beats him to it, because that would be similar, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's in production.
I know. I've heard that.
Do you know who they're courting to play the role?
I do. I can't remember off the top of my head now.
Bradley Cooper.
That's it. Yeah.
That's actually a good show.
Okay, fair enough.
I reckon he could walk like a puppet any day.
Right, well listen, before we get to Songs of the Week, coming up later in the show, we will have a listening guide. We haven't done one in a long time, and we have a shocking figure in the world of music for this week's listening guide, and we'll be reviewing the new album from Wolf Parade, Cry Cry Cry. But first, it's the Songs of the Week. Guys, can I have a number between 1 and 5, please?
Number 3, please.
This is The Breeders. It's their first song since 2009. It's called Wait in the Car. That's The Breeders. I grew up in a house where The Breeders were played on repeat quite a lot.
I thought you were going to say you grew up in the house with The Breeders.
I did not, but I heard their music quite often. And that kind of style, like bands like Belly, Pixies, obviously. You know, they're kind of like, I guess Pixies would be a good example to use, where it's like bands of this generation, this era, this style, they kind of fizzled out. And I mean, like, in terms of creating new material. Mm. So a comeback song can only do so much, and I guess maybe they knew that, because this is very short, very to the point, and it sounds like pretty much what you think it would sound like.
Yeah,
it's fine, but
time capsule stuff, to be honest, isn't it? Like, if somebody had told me that this was like actually an off cut from Last Splash, you probably wouldn't doubt it. Like, the production's ever so slightly cleaner, But that's probably the only advancement in the 20 years or 25 years or whatever it is.
Yeah, like, I think it's, they haven't released anything in about 8 years. And this is actually the first time that that Last Splash lineup have kind of recorded since the Last Splash album. And yeah, I think maybe off-cut is the right word, because I was a fan of the Breeders and, you know, Kim Deal, of course. I still think her presence is, you know, sorely missed in Pixies. But this was a bit, like, I like their kind of early dynamism.
Dave's delighted passes there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She's great, man. She's What's great. The problem? Also, I was taking a bite of a sandwich there.
So professional, Dave.
Bring me back in.
God almighty, lowering the tone. But no, this is really, like, it feels like the riff just, it feels like one of those reheated kind of, like, riffs some pub / punk band in London wrote back in the 70s. Yeah. It's very dated.
Hazel
Jan's
a great bass player. I just want to put that out there. Great, you know. She was in a perfect circle.
Yeah.
That's, Colm just thinks I've got a crush on her, okay? Like, she's really good at her job.
But this song, going back to it, I mean, it's okay. It's got a punchy rhythm. And like you say, it's lightning quick as well. So it doesn't overstay
its welcome.
Yeah,
it doesn't overstay its welcome, yeah.
It's fine, but it's not going into my playlist of, you know, best songs this year.
No.
It's grand. Craig, a number, please.
Number two, please. Dan.
Okay, I'm excited about this one. This is Stormzy. It's called 4 PM in London.
He's not disturbing when I'm praying. These dumb pricks want to see me leave, but we're staying. I need to drop my album for the streets, what we're saying. Let me drop it for the people. Heard the first tape, they want the sequel. Check the work rate, it isn't equal. Scary foes and a scary beat, it's getting evil. And if I need to talk about peas, I feel lethal. Yeah, Bizzle, that's my family. Got a little family. He said, you got some millies now, welcome to the family. Remember when you done the Dench tour and you brang me? 2017, now I'm directing like I'm standing, feeling better than I've ever been. Filled with adrenaline. Garnet and King, you can see it in my melanin. Do a world tour, going places that you've never been. Man are doing shows now from Serbia to Kettering. It's funny how it happens when you're young and you're blessed. When they're saying no, when my God's saying yes.
Excited about this one for a couple of reasons. One, because he's checking in with us essentially ahead of his second record. Mm-hmm. We know this won't be on the second album because the closing lyric is, second album coming soon. But I'm also excited to see if can Craig finally learn to love grime and thus Stormzy?
I mean, this didn't strike me as grime, really.
I'm just dragging this.
Do you know what
this.
I mean?
Craig hates grime.
All these genres are really interchangeable. No, I actually really like this because, I mean, it is essentially a freestyle. His voice on it, like, it's very unpolished. It's quite emotional. It is, as you say, like an update. And I liked it. Yeah, I thought it was a powerful performance.
It
I liked the hashtag Pogback reference.
Lyrically, it's in the kind of Kanye Real Friends area.
Oh, very much so.
He's
yeah.
kind of saying, like, you know, I'm successful now and I now have all these new problems that I never had before. And also, I've got the weight of the world on my shoulders because not only am I expected to be good at what I'm doing because of the acclaim that Gang Signs and Prayer was met with, but like, you know, the people I grew up with are looking at me in a different way now and I don't want to let them down. I also want to make sure that my friends are still my friends. I don't know what advice to come. So it's basically him.
He has diagnosed himself preemptively with second album syndrome. The fact that he's done it hopefully means that it actually won't take effect, but he's basically addressed all the sort of reasons that typically mess a band or mess an artist up for a second record.
Yeah, we've actually seen that kind of with Drake. I mean, not second album, but certainly with the More Life thing where he's just like, well, this isn't an album. This is just a kind of... It seems all these artists are very anxious not to be out of the limelight for too long. I guess because everyone wants things so immediately now, they feel like they have to...
Just because he didn't feature on tracks once a fortnight since he dropped
No,
the
actually, I think Craig raises a very interesting point there. The likes of Drake and Stormzy and I guess maybe Bieber and a few others, the fact that they're the most streamed as well indicates that the way that music is being consumed now by the current generation is very much like, yeah, it's immediacy. What did you do for me lately? I mean, it's like, you know, like you have to have stuff out all the fucking time. And I guess Stormzy is someone who clearly takes his art quite seriously. And especially, I think, if he didn't before, he certainly is now. And it's like, because the world is watching. And he knows the world is watching. And like, this felt like, you're in a therapy session with the guy. And also, his performance is tremendous.
I
thought his cadence was really compelling. I love the video, just him. Yeah. You know,
the sample works really well, I thought.
It's
ghostly, menacing almost.
But the more you listen to it, the more you're like, oh, there's more there than I initially thought. Yeah.
Plus,
when
you consider that this is a check-in, this is, you know, I mean, he's not phoning it in. Like, he obviously felt a little bit of pressure from whoever to put out a song, and he's chosen to be honest and basically be like, look, yeah, here it is, and here's what it sounds like, and here's where I'm at, and don't worry, you know, like, it's all good, see you soon. Yeah. I thought this was really fucking great.
I also legit wanted to cheer when he just went, little fuck boys. I was just like, whoa, go on, lass. I don't know. Sass.
Come on, Stormzy. Sass, as he clicks his own finger. Incredible. Yeah, this is great, and it makes me excited for the next record. But, you know, take your time. Don't rush it, mate. We're with you. Number
1.
Well, we mentioned Killer Mike earlier in the show. He's back with his buddy LP. I believe they're called Run the Jewels. This song is off FIFA 18. It's called Mean Demeanor.
Stuff spitting dust, pain and rain. We don't aim, just dump. El Tornado on all y'all chumps.
This that running bump, that B54 from attacking smack a jump. This that killer spit, that feeling is vicious, venomous. El Tornado kick.
Don't doubt, we will mow down you dogs. No cops to spend here at all. We will now clown you all. Go shout it to the gods. RTJ's arrived to make the minion cry. Burn our image in their eyes. Better get a little bit of that Zen shit in you. I'm a long hitter, but I found a fuck out of frog rap dinner.
You know, I've gone back to Run the Jewels 3, and every time I go back, I want it to be better than it is. It's still a good record, but I still can't help but be a bit disappointed. I was a little bit disappointed when I saw them live as well. I wonder if I'm falling out of love with them a little bit. This did enough to keep me still interested. I think it's quite good, especially when you consider, you know, it's for a game soundtrack.
This is
and it does sound like it would be over the ad and all that kind of stuff, but at the same time, it's better than, say, when Robbie Williams did It's Only Us for FIFA 2000. Yeah,
speak for yourself, mate.
And I mean, like, I'd also say that, yeah, this is probably a better track, even than the ones that kind of go a little bit towards that. We're not saying much in particular from the third album. So yeah. Something like Ticketron, say, for instance. I mean, I must say, like, I enjoy that kind of claustrophobic, condensed sort of low-end bass throughout this track. It sounds really good. Like I say, lyrically it's not strong, but then, yeah, it's for FIFA 18. I mean, you're talking about a corporation that goes mental over, like, Palestinian flags and embroidered poppies, like, and B, who are targeting 8-year-olds. So, you know, there's a limit to what you can do.
Yeah.
Strategy meetings must be a lot of fun.
I'll tell you what. I mean, this is all right.
Yeah, we just had that, like, hashtag Pogback, and in this you've got, like, literally talk about a kick that's in the promotional stuff, El Tornado, which Ronaldo pulls off, and it doesn't look that impressive.
Do you reckon they were like, I don't know about this, and it's like someone just, like, put the check in front of them? How many zeros? So.
I like the sleigh bells underneath. It kind of adds an interesting
thing.
It's a good song. Reminds me of Gwen Stefani's Christmas song a bit.
It's a great song, as we know from our live
show.
Yes,
of course.
This is good. It's fine. And I mean, it does the job. I mean, like, this is designed to be played over a montage of goals as created by users and stuff. Like, and so.
Users.
Am I my dad? Gamers? Fuck. I think, yeah, officially old, lad. Sorry.
I mean, Killer Mike's flow on this is very good. And I like a lot of, there's some great internal rhyme stuff going on. But there's, like, something about this just being about nothingness and kind of, or being about a video game. And then when you think they've done similar stuff about more, you know, more important issues.
Sure,
maybe.
Yeah.
It kind of, it doesn't undermine any of the other stuff, but it kind of feels a bit off to me. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Putting that intensity into something, I don't know, they can just spread it around, the righteousness, be it about, you know, politics or football or,
no,
I suppose
measures.
We all can't we? Yeah. So yeah, it's good, but it's nothing again, you know, go crazy about
it. Yeah, it's fine. I saw someone say during the week, should they add Zach De La Rocca to the roster for, like, a full-time thing?
Yes, please.
I'd take it.
Yeah,
for
Run
the Jewels 4, I would take it.
Yeah, I'd give it a go.
It's probably not going to happen.
Oh, no.
Because
he's
notoriously vague and mysterious these days. But yeah, if Run the Jewels 4 wants to pique people's attention, maybe they need to make some changes. Okay, up next, number between 4 and 5, lads.
4, please, Dave.
It's Banks. It was Cullum Shout. The song is called Underdog.
You when you mean it, you better back it up. My breath is getting heated, baby, just hurry. As you come back as the underdog. As you come back as the underdog.
We go straight to Cullum Regan.
I called this without listening to it, to be perfectly honest. I just got the email and I was just like, well, this has come up. I'll fling
good
this
to know
into
he's
order.
Really putting in the hard yards. When no, comes to the show.
And then I listen to it.
At least he turns up.
Thank you, Craig.
Yeah, it's the small things, really.
Yeah.
Then I gave it a spin. I'm all in on this, to be honest. I think this is great. I think this is sort of real Scandinavian style electro pop. It's a lot brighter and breezier than I was expecting from her. Her sort of downfall in the past for me is that they always try to make her sound like kind of edgy and dangerous when the music clearly isn't.
Yeah, this feels a lot more natural for her. Yeah. And it's kind of, it's got this, like, it's like pleasingly efficient as well. I mean, even the choruses don't really play that big, but by the end you get a real sense of there is a kind of thing hanging it all together. It's like a well-written, constructed thing. Never really reaches those kind of, you know, euphoric levels for me. And I do still think, to a certain extent, I don't know if she's quite found her thing yet. I hear echoes of a lot of other artists out there at the moment. But yeah, definitely the most interesting I've heard her be in the last couple of years. Yeah.
I'm not quite getting it, I have to say. I just didn't leave an impression. And it was a situation where, like, the amount of music we had to listen to, even for this episode alone, stuff really had to get into my brain quickly. And I found myself, even kind of on the way over here, having listened to it before I left the house, being like, and obviously, you know, I could listen to it on my phone on the way over, but I just didn't bother. And I was just thinking, I was like, I can't remember what that song sounds like, apart from I thought it was a bit glossy and a bit tropical pop in places, and it's just a bit weak, lightweight. It's fine, there's nothing wrong with it, but it didn't stand out in any way.
Yeah,
I think it's kind of better than, like, the sum of its parts, if that makes any sense.
It doesn't.
Yeah, no. I think the way that it stacks up, kind of like.
No,
yeah.
Hang on. What does that mean?
Yeah, the way it stacks. I mean, the atmosphere it maintains throughout it, and on repeated listens, it definitely, well, it's gotten stuck in my head. But it doesn't have those moments that necessarily grab you straight away. And I don't think she's doing anything spectacularly different. But as an overall piece of work, yeah, it totally works for me.
I'll do a Craig.
There, I pulled that out of my arse, didn't I?
Cullen helped you. I'll do a Craig on it, and I'll wait for the album. Did someone say edgy and dangerous?
Oh.
Closing out the songs week this week, it's the boys. Converge.
Was this just to get me back for putting Banks on the list, was it?
No. I was doing my best to bring variety to the show.
So you're saying you couldn't remember the Banks song? Was it because Converge just blasted like everything else out of your head?
The song is called Reptilian. It is the closing track from upcoming album The Dusk in Us. Now, as we know, big fan of this band. We played them on the show before, and Cullum said they sound like people who weren't hugged enough as children, which I thought was very harsh. Listening back to that episode, I was like, that's very harsh. Some people spend years in therapy because of that, man. So, I love it. Yeah, I'm guessing you guys hate it.
It wasn't as long as on the other ones you made me listen to something.
Can you really
that.
Not appreciate anything about this?
I mean, genuinely, like, there are little bits of it that I can, but then, like, and I guess this is the problem when you go with this sort of intensity and volume and so forth, that, like, you can pick up on an element that you enjoy, and it's just a matter of time before it is just swept away by a tidal wave of noise.
Okay,
and
I have
thrashing.
To ask. I have to ask both of you a question. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want you to answer me honestly. And it's all right. Have you ever, either of you, ever listened to a Converge album from start to finish?
I have.
I once gave Jane Doe a bash on your recommendation.
Yeah, like I found myself kind of enjoying them at times. Like I like the other. We've got two songs thus far, haven't we? I know this
three
is the third.
There was Eve something on this.
But
yeah.
Eve was B-side. There's been another two since.
Okay. Oh, okay.
This is the third off the album. So yeah.
All right. Well, I think I had more time for those, and with this, it felt a bit like swept away immediately. Like it kind of erupted quite quickly, and I didn't think it quite earned, you know, some of its noise, and there was no great crescendos for me. It was just a very noisy riff a lot. I did appreciate him actually singing the lyrics, because I was looking at the lyrics and I was like, is he singing them? Because sometimes he doesn't bother. And I was like, oh no, he kind of is. So that was a plus.
Every now and then he does that. Yes, that is true. Yeah, look, I mean, they're an acquired taste for sure. And I would say, you know, try and... the point I wanted to make about the album thing was you do tune into that frequency as the album opens up. I mean, you do find yourself bedded in with it, because how could you not, you know? Like, they ain't holding back.
Oh, yeah. How do you not find comfort there?
I find a lot of comfort in Converge. I really, really do. I think they're a spectacular band. I'm glad they're still out there and still making music. And all I'll say, lads, is you better hope for a busy album week when that album drops. Otherwise, we'll be taking it on.
We're doing it one track at a time, mate, clearly. We're three down already, only a few more to go. Speaking of acts for which Dave has a particular passion, mentioned earlier that it was time for Listening Guide to make a return. And on the week that he releases Heaven Upside Down, it felt only right that we would turn the spotlight towards Mr. Marilyn Manson.
Okay, so yes, it's the fabulous No Encore Listening Guide, the sporadic, ever malleable No Encore Listening Guide. What I'm going to do this time, guys, is I'm going to go through the man's discography, but don't worry, okay. I have prepared it quite well this time for once. So,
excellent.
Okay, so we heard Disposable Teens there. Now, that song comes as part of a, you could say, an unholy trinity, a triptych that Manson fans and critics alike kind of put up there as the gold standard. So I would say, if you are brand new to Marilyn Manson, and if you're like, look, listen, I don't like his image, I don't like him, he's a bit of an idiot, and I've never actually bothered giving him a go.
Yeah.
As I said before with Nine Inch Nails, I think you might be surprised by just the pop sensibility of what can be in there, the songwriting chops, all that kind of stuff. I think, get past any kind of baggage you might have about the man and just dive right in. Otherwise, I don't know what else to tell you. So listen, okay, I would say, if you're like, well, Dave, what are the most essential Marilyn Manson albums to have? I would say Antichrist Superstar, which comes out in 1996. It's his second album following the 1994 debut, Portrait of an American Family. That's a record I'd say you could take or leave. I'd say start here. It was a critical and commercial success. Trent Reznor produced a few tracks, so as such, there's an industrial crunch all over this record. And it's kind of that mixture of kind of raw and also a bit of polish. It kind of feels like a low-budget record that was probably recorded in the studio.
Yeah, he wasn't quite there yet.
He wasn't quite there yet.
Vitally as well, though, it was the record that put him there in terms of popular culture and conservative culture, for that matter. This was the record that kind of made him into the sort of shocking figure that, you know, he's sort of been ever since.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, someone to really bother the kind of parents of middle America. I mean, the standout tracks on this record are Irresponsible Hate Anthem, The Beautiful People, Tourniquet, and Angel with Scab Wings, Reflecting God. They're all fantastic. Go check them out. Don't worry if you miss any of these tracks. I've made a playlist, which I will tell you about at the end of this. That leads into Mechanical Animals, two years later, which this is kind of like, you know, I guess for want of a better term, his Bowie record. I mean, like it's kind of...
Is that his, like, best, possibly? Or,
it's up
guy
there.
Really like that
you
album.
Can make the argument for
I
sure.
I think that's an easy entry point. Like
this is his kind of glam sci-fi.
Yeah, I mean, very listenable.
It's got The Dope Show, which is a very well-known song. It also has Rock Is Dead, which was performed in Dublin as part of the MTV European Music Awards in 1999, which was hosted by Ronan Keating. A brand new to the music scene, Britney Spears was there and won a few awards. And that's when Boyzone went up on stage. And Shane Lynch got on the mic and went, in the press recently, there's been a load of fucking shite about Boyzone breaking up. And he's like, we're not going anywhere. And like a week later, it was like, Boyzone have broken up.
Yeah. Did Iggy Pop face plant?
It was a great award.
That was a stunning night.
He dove into the crowd who all moved.
Yeah.
That was a hell of an evening.
Nobody got the memo there. God. Like,
But Mechanical Animals, great record. I don't like The Drugs, but The Drugs Like Me, that's just a jam. You know, that's like something Mick Jagger would like to come up with, I would imagine. Coma White is a beautiful song, quite gentle, surprisingly. And the thing about Manson is, I mean, like, you know, for a long time, lyrically, he was very, very, very sharp and very able to kind of cut to the kind of underbelly. I think it's no surprise that, you know, kind of angsty teens flocked to him so much because he was speaking their language. Hollywood in 2000 completes this trilogy. This was released after Columbine propelled him to kind of America's number one boogeyman status if he wasn't there already. Although you might successfully argue that Eminem had by that point stolen his Won't Somebody Please Think of the Children, Helen Lovejoy, Thunder. Some of the tracks in this record kind of date back quite a while though, back to like 95. But I mean, like, it's an absolute behemoth of an album that spectacularly fails the coveted No Encore Brevity Rule, clocking in at 20 tracks. If you choose to count the acoustic version of The Nobodies, which is decent, the standouts for me on this one are The Love Song, The Fight Song, Disposable Teens, which we heard, The Nobodies, The Death Song, and Born Again, which, by the way, remember when Sean Adams was here on Sunday and he was like, that song sounds like a glam Marilyn Manson disco song?
Yeah.
Born Again is that song.
All right.
So yeah, that's the conclusion of this trilogy, which unfortunately gives way to something of a downfall as Manson succumbs to the excess and the kind of bacchanalia that he once lorded over while simultaneously enjoying and also reaping strong artistic work from at the same time, which was important. I mean, for a time, his work becomes quite leaden after this and obvious, a bit uninspired. He remains a sharp singles specialist in this run, though, with the likes of Mob Scene, Heart-Shaped Glasses, and We're From America, all of a very high quality. But the parent albums, like The Golden Age of Grotesque in 2003, Eat Me, Drink Me, and The High End of Low, they just can't be described as essential offerings. You know, with Eat Me, Drink Me in particular is like a career nadir. It's not a good album at all.
Is he a bit of a kind of Morrissey in the fact that, like, he kind of needs a really good musical foil to play off? Do you know what I mean? He's reliant on someone else.
I think so.
At least inspiring him, or kind of.
I think so. Yeah. And I mean, and that does come back to fruition, like, with the kind of the return to form.
Yeah.
I mean, because, I mean, like, he worked with like a lot of interesting people on those first records, but like, The High End of Low, though, which comes along, I think it was 2009, does hint at hope for the future if he decided to kind of trim the fat, cut the bullshit, and really fucking go for it, which he started to really do that with Born Villain in 2012, which I reviewed for Hot Press, and actually I really regretted. I gave it 3 out of 5, and I found myself being like, I should have given it a 4. It's actually very good. Like, No Reflection
could have changed his career, mate.
I could have saved him. No Reflection is an amazing comeback single. There's some belters on that album, including the cover of You're So Vain with Johnny Depp, problematic Johnny Depp on drums.
They're besties. Yeah.
They're best fucking mates, yeah. But
apparently they just sit there and mumble at each other. I read a Rolling Stones interview once where they were, it was just like, yeah,
the
love of not enunciating seems to have really brought them together.
I mean, whatever happened to Johnny Depp's voice over the years? I do not know.
A lot of drugs, I would say.
But he turned into like a different, like he started impersonating Hunter S. Thompson and just became that person, I think. But anyway, go on.
Substance abuse. So basically, what I would say about this is, I remember, like, you know, 2003, buying The Golden Age of Grotesque and bringing it home and being like, oh my God, this is going to be incredible. And sitting there and just kind of feeling like, oh, you know, like, it's fun, I'm having fun, but something's gone, something's lost. And he did lose something in that run, but it comes back into focus on Born Villain, and he fucking knocks it out of the park. I've mentioned it numerous times in the show. 2015 is The Pale Emperor. He works with a guy called Tyler Bates, which is a name that is annoying these days because of the wrestler Tyler Bates.
Very close to Tyler Bates.
Ridiculous,
yeah,
isn't it? Yeah, they're not the same person. And essentially,
that would make him producing at a 14 or something.
The Pale Emperor, Craig, I've talked enough about it.
Oh yeah, no, this like really hooked me back into what he was doing, because I mean, there was a solid, you know, decade where I was just like, I couldn't have cared less. The songwriting is great on it. It's more of a kind of bluesy, yeah, again, back to that glam fun thing. And also, he found a kind of narrative direction where, like, whereas he'd sound quite tired, he kind of took on this new role where it wasn't so much that I'm just going to shock you now. It was kind of like, I'm like the elder statesman,
yeah,
of
exactly,
this decadence. And like, it was very interesting.
Plus, I mean, it opens with a track like Killing Strangers, which is,
yeah,
brilliant.
Great.
And that's like inspired directly by his father, his recently late father, who served in Vietnam. And it's, you know, about American military and just casual murder, all that kind of stuff. So he had something to chew on. And
yeah,
it felt almost like he was like, you know what? I want to reclaim my throne. So he's never going to be as shocking as he once was or as notorious, but he found a gold vein of songwriting again.
Yeah.
So for me, to wrap up this listening guy, what I would say is, I'll mention, I made a playlist and it's 40 tracks plus at this stage, but he's just such a good, like, there's so many good songs where I was like, that has to be in there. So I'm going to put that up on my Twitter at Henry Dave, on the No Encore Twitter at No Encore Show. But if you're like, I want albums, the gold standard of albums are Antichrist Superstar, Mechanical Animals, Hollywood, and The Pale Emperor.
Cool.
Missing from that list is Heaven Upside Down. Now, granted, we've only had sort of the past 10 days to get used to the record, which drops today by the time this you're listening to this episode. To kind of quickly sum that one up, has the rich vein of form from Pale Emperor not turned out to be as rich as we thought?
Well, I think that's unfair. I think he's dropped a step, for sure. But I think he's dropped a step lyrically. I think this is a really good album. I think this is very strong. And I think that I've seen some very negative opposition to this record, kind of saying that he's gone back to the worst of the overstating Manson. Like he's just trying to show off. He's trying to be like, you know, like so shocking once again. And there's elements of that for sure. But I think that those moments are part of very, very strong arrangements. He's working with Tyler Bates again, who came back to work with him despite having a box cutter pulled on him during a tour they did or something. So, yeah, I mean, like, I
lads.
Guess... I really like this record. I really like this record. I think it's very direct. I think it's a lot of fun. I don't think it has the kind of depth that the Pale Emperor has.
Mm.
But at the same time, I think it does have those kind of moments if you choose to go with them. I think it's very strong.
I think something like Tattooed in Reverse was the only moment that I really felt, okay, yeah, like... You know, that's still there. That like that kind of synthy, bluesy, funky thing isn't necessarily lost, because the rest of it, like you say, I did feel that it was a bit he was shocking for the sake of it.
And he was trying to kind of write, you know, those shock anthems that he's done so much better before. And again, yeah, I think lyrically there's a few missteps. But no, I agree, the arrangements were strong. It's probably just more in that vein of thing that doesn't quite do it for me. So definitely kind of less interesting for me. But
I saw something written the other day. Honestly, off the top of my head, I can't remember where, but it was talking about when they released the trailer for this record, which included, you know, kind of a red tie and blood dripping, and people were like, oh, is that Trump? And it turns out that the guy who shot that is the same guy who then a few months later shot the Kathy Griffin photo of her holding Trump's decapitated head. But they said, you know, like, who would have thought that Marilyn Manson's provocative video from, you know, a year ago would then be overshadowed by a Kathy Griffin comedy photo. Well, it kind of shows you what you're up against now when you're in an effort to shock America or shock the world.
That is the thing. I mean, it's just things have, like, it's not slating him. Things have just gotten too crazy, even for Marilyn.
I mean, like, that's the case he has to face now, where it's like, how does this guy promote a record? Because he promoted this one harder than he promoted The Pale Emperor.
Yeah.
The Pale Emperor kind of just came out.
I mean, you can kind of see, I suppose, then, though, like, why he does those wild interviews, like the one we
discussed.
That's
the point. Yeah, but people talking.
But I think, like, he's an interesting enough character, and he's got enough, like, if he just does good work.
But he
work,
has to play the role. He can't just sit down and be, like, not doing the thing. That's what he does.
I'll be perfectly honest and say, like, that I'm somebody who's always found Marilyn Manson, the character, or Marilyn Manson, the person, far more interesting than Marilyn Manson, the musician. And I'm imagine that I'm not alone in that. So, you know, he knows he has to weaponize it. Anyway, that record dropping today also is the new one from Wolf Parade. It's called Cry, Cry, Cry. And this, from it, is Your Dreaming. On the screen, they move so fast, it's just like life. But we're dreaming.
Madness. What about our love? So hard to start in a violent age. And I don't wanna live in this place anymore. Everybody cries. Everybody needs some comfort.
Yeah, one of the lead singles from the new Cry 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 album from Wolf Parade, along with Valley Boy, which we did, I think, listen to before.
We did indeed,
Yeah, this is the first record that they've done collectively in how many years?
7 years, I believe, since Expo 86. Yeah. We got the EP last year, but I think it was just called, you know, EP4 or something. Yeah. It felt very much like, here's what we're working on, we want to get it out there. But this is like a proper statement. And I think it's interesting, like I never had a great love for this band. I always kind of liked them from afar. This to me felt like a polished statement, and actually them sounding maybe more comfortable than they have done in quite a while. I have a lot of time for this record.
The title comes from C'est La Vie Way, which was on that EP, which is one of the best songs of last year. It's an absolute gorgeous number of a song. Yeah, I am a big Wolf Parade fan. The Apologies to the Queen Mary in 2005 is one of my favourite records. It contains I'll Believe in Anything, which is in my top 10 favourite songs ever. I've seen them live a bunch of times. I'm looking forward to seeing them in the Button Factory on the 20th of this month. And when they went away, though, I must say I wasn't heartbroken, because I felt that over the course of three records, the aforementioned Apologies to the Queen Mary, At Mount Zoomer and Expo 86, it started to wane. And there was moments, for sure, but like on all these records, but it was definitely a case of like first, second, third. I mean, really. Right. So by the time that they announced that they were going on hiatus, indefinite hiatus, I was like, yeah, okay, cool. I mean, like, if that's all we get, that's all we get. I mean, like, you know, they've left a good looking corpse, that's grand. And of course, they're always doing different things. Like, Dan Bochner was in Handsome Furs with his then wife for a few albums. Spencer Krug has been in a million different bands. Yeah, to a
lot, you know, of side projects there.
Diminishing returns. I mean, like, some great stuff and some not so great stuff. So the announcement that they were coming back was a shock, in as much as I was like, well, I kind of thought they were done. I mean, I didn't know what else more they have to say. And I saw them at Body and Soul last year, and I think I've mentioned before that, like, in the middle of the set, some guy in the front row, in that classical Irish way of not even yelling it, he kind of went, still got it. And Dan Bochner heard him and kind of went, yeah, still got it. And it was just like, Jesus.
Well, it was like, classic kind of, Dan.
But it was like they do still have it. Live, they're a particularly great force. And this album kind of confirms that. I mean, it's an album that nobody needed, but sure, maybe they needed to make it. I mean, like, Craig says they sound comfortable. Do they sound too comfortable?
I mean, you know, it's interesting that you say, like, maybe they needed to make it. I think also they probably almost definitely needed the break before they could, yeah, make this record. This doesn't even sound like an reinvigoration. It sounds in many ways like a reset button has been hit. That the same sort of, you know, and I don't mean this in a necessarily critical way, but the kind of the grab bag format of, you know, we're kind of going to show everything that we can do here. We're going to flex the prog muscles and the sort of, okay, shoppy, let's say, let's, indie pop writing.
Well, let's say no one listening to this has ever heard them properly before. How would, right, you best describe Wolf Parade?
So basically, they've got a kind of a dual frontman thing, and, yeah, basically they play off each other quite wonderfully, so that you get half of this kind of well-crafted pop music, yeah, and half of this very explorative prog sort of, you know, long rock guitar solo, yeah, yeah, 6-7 minute tracks, etc.
And it's something that works very well over the course of an album because it mixes it up, but they're kind of combined enough. I suppose Spencer Krug is more of the vaudevillian kind of artistic kind of making, mm, a statement, and Dan's kind of enthralled to, you know, your classic rockers to an extent. But yeah, like, this to me felt a bit like, you know, they're never going to have that, like, tightly wound, I think, kind of, you know, pent up energy release thing they had in the early years, I don't think. But this struck me like the way, you know, Brand New's Science Fiction when it came out. It's just like, it's a more reflective thing. It's kind of very recognizably them, but slightly dialed back and, you know, slightly just kind of giving a bit more room to breathe and a bit more polished, which might turn some people off, you know. It's not frantic. There are moments. But I really like this. I mean, yeah, like, it struck me like, as a Canadian band, that maybe a lot of their peers got more acclaim and plaudits and possibly had higher highs and, you know, more charismatic people in them, or kind of different reasons why you were drawn to them. Some of the statements they're making on this record, before I heard it, I was a bit nervous. And, like, with Valley Boy, I was like, okay, they're talking about David Bowie being dead. They're talking about, you know, okay, Trump, things are going to shit. Oh, this culture of, you know, streaming and everything's terrible online and blah, blah, blah. And we saw Arcade Fire tackle that really, really badly this really year. Dramatic. And here, Wolf Parade, like, their compatriots do it very well, actually. I think they handled it quite well. There's some moments where you're like, okay, you're belaboring the point. But on the whole, I think they did a good job.
There are ball drops on this record, yeah, without doubt. Like, the opener, even Lazarus Online, is kind of plodding. Granted, though.
Oh, man.
No.
I was going to say that they begin with
a huge
statement.
I thought that was great.
What do you think?
That was one of the most confident and arresting openers I've heard all year.
That's where I got the Arcade Fire thing, where they had that weirdly flipping thing about suicide and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, this is a much more deftly
done. I don't know the backstory, if he's being literal, but it appears to be like a fan wrote to him that, I guess, her boyfriend is dead and she's chosen to live, essentially, and it's, yeah, based around this piano ballad that builds and builds. As soon as I even heard the first 30 seconds, I was like, oh yeah, they're back.
Yeah, I was on board.
See,
yeah.
They've still got it.
I genuinely thought it was a ponderous.
Well, was
opening?
It because you were kind of waiting for that Wolf Parade thing of just like, hit me, you know, straight out of the traps or
not
something
necessarily,
like that?
Not necessarily. I'll tell you, I have a theory, and like, it's only expounded on by this album, is that, like, they can do huge and epic and kind of 5-7 minutes, and they can do 3-minute tight indie pop, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But when the two meet, when they try to do a sort of a deep, thoughtful cut of about 4 minutes without that expansive, like, room to breathe, yeah, that sort of, like, the 3-minute musical interludes of something here like Baby Blue or Weaponized.
Yeah.
That if they don't have that at their disposal, it just ends up a little bit, I don't know, just cloying or something.
Right, okay. No, it struck me as, yeah, I suppose.
I thought it was empathetic, actually. I thought it was very, like, oh yeah, no, this is delicate. This
I'm
is well
dead
handled.
Inside as well, though, Dave, so that doesn't
matter. But you know, by the time we get to some of the kind of penultimate songs, I was kind of thinking, definitely thematically, okay, we have the message. Although I really like the closer, because it's a real kind of like, it's an anti-Trump thing. It's done the way that's a bit like, listen, we're all fucking fucked. And it's like that kind of really resigned, you know, blast it all to hell kind of thing. And I thought it was really good. But yeah.
I think as an album that does certainly have those moments that there's more than enough sort of chinks of light along the way.
Sure, you
know,
yeah.
This isn't just a terminally dark record.
No, not at all.
There's some lovely pop moments along there.
Yeah, I mean, imagine Valley Boy I was never fully sold on, and I'm still not fully sold on it, but I love the breakdown. The middle eight is beautiful, and it actually is really kind of charging. Your Dreaming is a great like single in particular.
Like as a 1-2... or 2-3 as they're placed on the record in a very traditional sort of here's our singles sort of way, it is good.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed Baby Blue, that kind of theatrical like let's do it again, like let's drag out that ending but it's coming back again. It actually reminded me of like Metallica's Moth Into Flame in terms of structure, not in terms of like what's in it, but the idea of like this song should be over by now but it's not and I'm still having a good time. How do we feel about Who Are You? Which
that was my least favorite, I think.
Yeah, the football hooligan, like did 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 did.
Yeah,
I was like, did they go to a match somewhere and they were like inspired?
That was Spencer Krug again, wasn't it? Because I think he's the one that kind of can tend to get on my nerves. Well, he overdoes it.
But this is him. This is him overdoing it. Yeah. I mean, like, this is him where he's like he's using his voice to be that kind of like funnel going off a fucking wind tunnel, and it's like you're either gonna like it or you're not, but I think it drags in the middle or like kind of a start of the third act type thing, but by the end I am finding them winning the day.
That's exactly my
and
my
I think
thought,
that you know, as a comeback record for a band that kind of definitely punched themselves out to a degree, there's enough here to admire and to kind of bring forward, and I think the fact that the three of us have taken slightly different kind of favourites from it is indication enough that that's the case. So I mean, yeah, I'm going to go 7.5. Now, that comes with a lot of love from a big fan, and I'm looking forward to hearing some of these live. I'm looking forward to hearing the classics live. If you've never seen them before, like, and you're curious, get a ticket to that gig because it's going to be fucking great.
Yeah,
October the 20th in the Button Factory, I believe.
I'd go 7.5 as well. Yeah, I think nailed it.
Yeah, I'd go 7.5.
Wow.
Let's keep that's it symmetrical. Why not?
Yeah. Wow. What else can we listen to?
Much like I know you have as well, Dave, been listening to the new And So I Watch It From Afar record.
I have. The Endless Shimmering comes out at the end of the month. I think it's actually out on the 20th.
Yeah, I think we are professed fans from previous shows anyway. Oh, people know that we're into them. And it's not a letdown, put it that way. They're back on form.
It's arresting for... Yeah, they're back in form for sure. Ayers was a decent record, but it definitely dropped the ball a little bit for them, you know, but this is definitely more in the right vein that I quite like. It's been arresting to listen to. I've been enjoying it. I've also checked out that new Wolf Alice album, Visions of a Life, because I completely forgot that it came out.
Oh yeah, I missed that until Sean mentioned it on Sunday, actually.
And it's really good, and it kind of does that weird thing where like it's all over the place but in a good way. Yeah. Like they're a band that refuse to be categorized. Like I feel like they're almost resentful of ever staying in the same place for more than 5 minutes, because you have the singles, you know, like which were diametrically opposed. You have Yuk Fu, which is this 2 minute fucking stomper, and you've got Don't Delete the Kisses, which I think is one of the more kind of emotionally engaging, well crafted songs of the year. And then you have some kind of weird things where they go off into like these weird prog moments themselves and these kind of like long guitar solos out of nowhere. But there's just a general sense of atmosphere throughout that really carries it through. And I think it's a very good record. It's worth checking out.
I was listening to Moses Sumney's debut, which is Aromanticism. And I was kind of like, I'd heard some of his stuff. And I'm like, it's tasteful, but I'm not sure if it's for me. But no, I thought it's actually growing on me. It's a very sad, immaculately sad record that has like neo-soul moments and jazzy bits, and it's nice and airy. It's good. Yeah,
good. Did you listen to anything else? Because Dave's just taking a bite of sandwich, forgetting that he needs to sign off now.
I think, yeah. No, I haven't actually. Dave,
I wanted to ask, did you listen to the sad record because you felt really bad about not coming to the show?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, fit the mood.
That's got to be it.
I forgot that you said that you'd heard the Inside Watch From Afar album, and I thought, I can get away with this bite of the sandwich.
Oh,
turns out I couldn't. A reminder that I won't be eating a sandwich in front of students in NUIG in Galway on the 4th.
Well, you might be, but not on stage.
You never know. Yeah. Who the fuck knows, man? We can put that on our rider. One sandwich, please.
Single sandwich. Bite-sized chunks.
4th of November in Galway. I've been to Galway in a long time. Looking forward to it. And it's going to be great.
It's going to be exciting.
I hope Craig will come to the show. It's going to be awesome. to close us out this week, new Irish music. We've had our fill of great Irish music in the last few weeks, and it's hard to pick just one, but didn't want to let this one go by. The Scratch are a band that I saw at a party about a year and a half ago, playing what I coined as traddle, basically traditional Irish and metal, is what it sounded like. But wait, listener, I swear it's really good. They've actually decided to branch out even further and actually write some proper kind of songs with lyrics and things. And yeah, I mean, I saw the Rubber Bandits kind of calling this song out in particular as kind of a really good example of a wry look at Irish people and Irish culture. This song essentially is about being cornered at a party by someone who's nice but really fucking overbearing, and you desperately want to get away from them. And I
was about to say, you said you first came across these guys at a party a
year ago,
right?
I know. Yeah. Look, I know what they're talking about, and
because that's me.
Yeah. I've probably been that guy. I hope it's not specifically about me, but if it is, I'll own it because it's a really good fucking song. The song is called Punisher. But before I go, Craig, thanks for coming to the show.
No problem. Anytime. Well, most times.
Colm, it's good to see you.
I'll try to keep it up
as always. My name is Dave Henry. This has been New Encore. There will be New Encore. This is The Scratch and Punisher.
When he asked me, are you left-handed?
You know, when I'm playing guitar itself,
I don't know why it goes like that, but just sometimes that's just the way it goes, you know. Just naturally go to the left-handed position, you know.
So then he asked me, well, what hand do you anchor then? I go, both, man. It's like I'm milking a fucking cow. Do you know how many languages I speak? 18, that's right. Been an engineer for fucking 30 years. What do you think that is? No, it's not just a clothes, yeah, it's a clothes hanger, but what did I use it for? So basically, I used that to get into my gaff, got locked out of my gaff last night. But basically, I just flipped it up, see that? Flipped it over like that, and then I coiled it under like that. And then I shimmied it under the door. Wait, you see this now? Shimmied it under the door, flipped it up and under, and then bang, now you're handy with it. And I took a bit of a fucking engineer for 48 years.
podcast is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.